It's time for ESPN Las Vegas legal insider Justin Watkins with Battleborn Injury Lawyers, only on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
O'clock hour is here. Let's do a giveaway. We've got NBA Summer League tickets, four tickets for any day. All 30 teams are playing at the Thomas and Mack. It runs next Thursday through the 20th, so 7:10 to 7:20. And we've got a four-pack right now. Call our 7-364-1100, 364-1100. You can get your tickets at unlvtickets.com. And the other cool thing is up on lvsportsnetwork.com, if you don't win these, we've got VIP tickets you can sign up for and potentially win four reserve VIP tickets. Again, that's at lvsportsnetwork.com. But right now, call 364-1100, caller 7. Justin Watkins is in. I want to talk some hockey to open up here. Willie, do you have the rosters for the Battle for Vegas in front of you? Do we have the VGK team kind of settled?
I have the VGK team.
Let's do it. Well, we already knew the Raiders team. We talked about that one.
All right, so Captain Jack Eichel will be joined by former Captain Riley Smith, former Golden Knights Ryan Reeves, Logan Thompson, and James Neal, Cole Schwint, Derek Englund, and who is that down there? I can't read that name. That name's blurry on my graphic here, but those are the big names right there.
All right.
So over-under on home run jacks for this team.
If I remember right, Eichel was pretty good. I think he hit a couple home runs, but they don't have a good track record against the Raiders. I think they've won one of them.
Brock Bauer's team's pretty good, and Waller's coming back, right? The new Miami Dolphin?
The new Miami Dolphin.
We think, unless Miami said shut it down. No softball. Get ready for the football season. Let's go.
And I will say this. I believe Riley Smith is kind of one of the founding guys who put this on, and he, even when he was gone, came back every year and put it on. Cool to see Logan Thompson come back. Do it too. That's cool.
Terrence Long is who the other.
Well, you know, Reggie Jackson is one of the captains, and he's thrown out the first pitch, but I think that's tremendous. That's awesome. And Terrence Long's a former Oakland A as well. I think Mets prospect. So
cool.
Yeah, they're doing another pick. Get the A's involved, right? MD's cool with that. We're good to go. Mark Davis. Okay, Mitch Marner. You know, we heard about this for a while, but you know, we just talked to Ashley Weiss, ringside reporter. And you know, she was raving about what a good player he is. And I know you talk about some of the other star players in the league who are not two-way players, and it looks like the Knights have got a guy who's a more complete player. It's not just someone out there to score goals.
Yeah, I mean, I would say arguably he's not a goal scorer in that way. He's very much in the build of sort of Jack Eichel. And what Jack Eichel has become, Marner has kind of always been as a two-way player. I mean, he'll put up the points, but the bulk of his points are coming on assists and not on goals. I think he cleared the 100-point threshold for the first time in his career this last season, but didn't have 30 goals. So that tells you how many assists he's putting together. You know, playing with Matthews is going to help with a heck of a lot with those assists. You know, guy who's putting up 50 or 60 goals a year. So I feel super spoiled as a VGK fan in that every time there's a big name player, they find a way to go out and get them. They are always trying to improve the roster, always trying to make a splash. It does seem like between Florida and Vegas now, those are the premier destinations for free agent or free agent to be players right now.
Must be all the state income tax.
It's part of it.
It's gotta be all of it.
It's gotta be part of it.
It's gotta be all. Toronto can't compete. I saw someone joking as they laid out this whole argument, and it clearly was going towards the, hey, they have no state income tax.
Yeah.
And then at the bottom, it's like two of the better organizations that people really want to play for because they're quality.
Yeah.
Like that's the biggest difference, is that they strive to win and they're good organizations.
Well, and I mean, I haven't really engaged too much with Maple Leaf Twitter, but I followed along as this was starting to play itself out. And, you know, Twitter isn't the real world, but man, the reputation that they've earned is being hard on their players and kind of nuts.
They just kill them on the way out.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's pretty rough stuff they throw on
like
there.
Traitor or he sucks?
Both. All of, both. You know, he's responsible for all their playoff losses. He's, you know, he's that guy. He's a traitor. You know, he grew up in the area. And kind of like, he was a king here and he could have played out his career. And then, you know, a couple of the more reasonable ones were like, hey, man, he got death threats here. Like, don't act like he was a king here. He got death threats here when they kept losing in the first round as a, 25, 26-year-old. So
I think we need to differentiate. When we talk about Canadian fans and Canadian media and coverage, Toronto is a different animal than what McDavid gets in Edmonton, right? Do you think it's more chill there where there's some pressure, but it's not Toronto pressure?
I think there's Toronto pressure from the team along the lines of team success. I think that there is national media that happens to be based out of Toronto that are not necessarily Maple Leafs backers, who are backers of Canadian talent. And they are going to – the Canadian talent is always going to be put on a pedestal above the American talent, and excuses will always be made. And just – we talk about this every week. Right off the bat, who was the – who's the favorite to win?
They're the favorites. Got to bet them.
Yep.
Oilers are going to win again, except they never win. Yeah. And they're getting close, but they don't win.
Yep.
McDavid, McJesus, he's going to win this year. Is he?
I'm going to give you the perfect comparison. And this comes from, like, dealing with the media members from these two cities and then seeing the fan base when they play the Golden Knights. Toronto. Here's your analogy. Toronto is New York. Edmonton is LA, because the media is just as brutal as the Toronto media is just as brutal as the New York media. They're just as brash with toward the Las Vegas media, and that's just the air in which they walk with, and that would be the perfect comparison. When you say, how hard are they on Edmonton? The expectations are there in that big city when it comes to hockey and McDavid and the Oilers, like L.A., but the harshness from the fans and the media in New York that's how it is in Toronto.
Yeah, I could buy into that. I mean, I would have said, Vancouver's L.A., but the reality is Edmonton has the championship pedigree like L.A. does.
And expectations.
Yeah. And Vancouver doesn't have any of those expectations. So, yeah, no, I think you got it. I think you nailed it. But, I'm excited to see what it turns out to be. I mean, we are getting and have been pretty top-heavy, although, you can't quite one-for-one it, but you can almost one-for-one it with the Petrangelo contract that won't be coming off the books but will be going to LTIR before the season, which is a big deal. That's not LTIR after the season. It's LTIR before the season. Sounds like unlikely to pass any physicals for the rest of his contract or his career. And it sounds like his career is done. So that's, $8.8 million of that $12 million that comes off the books. And then, they just signed Korzak today to an extension. Yeah. Three and a half? Mm-hmm. Which is a pretty high number for a young defenseman who hasn't played too much, but that starts after this next year. That's a 4-year extension after this next year, so it doesn't place on next year's cap. So we'll see how they run out the roster. They're going to have to fill in for a couple of goal scorers.
So let me get your take on this, because this is how I read into the whole Petrangelo situation, and I don't have a problem with it. So the way I'm going to break it down is going to just sound like I'm knocking it, but I don't. This is a guy who they understand his career is done. And he could realistically, because the other day I wanted clarification on the statements and I texted the team. It's not a retirement announcement. But knowing his career is over, he could very well just retire. It sounds like they're doing the right thing and standing by a guy who definitely deserves everything that he gets in terms of money and lore, if you will, and Hall of Fame coming. But by staying part of the NHL, the insurance is going to cover all this and he's going to get paid. Whereas if this was somebody that wasn't who he was, they could very well just say, he could force him into a retirement announcement and not get that money some way, shape, or form, because he's – does that make sense?
I think the hockey culture is very different. these contracts get passed around all the time. You remember for a short period of time, we owned the Shea Weber contract.
Right.
He was in this exact situation for 4 years where he could not physically play anymore. His contract got handed around. People kept exchanging draft picks to move around this money. It was just paper that moved around, and wherever team he was quote-unquote on at that time, he'd have to show up, fail his physical, get paid his money, move on. So I actually don't think they could have forced him into retirement. It's just not part of hockey culture. This happens all the time. What will be interesting, what made me think of a parallel is, you know, we just saw Brad Marchand sign a 6-year deal, mm-hmm. which will make him 43 years old when this deal ends. I wonder if the NHL is going to take a look at that and say, no way you think he's going to play when he's 43. This is a Bobby Bonilla deal that yeah. you've put out, you know, 4 years or 3 years past his life, playing life, in order to circumvent the cap. I wonder if they'll take a look at that. That one would be interesting, but clearly he'll be in that same situation, like 43 years old. There's no forward playing that at that age.
Willie's here. It's Cofield. Justin Watkins. We're live at the Battleborne Broadcast Center. So who's tougher? Toronto fans on Mitch Marner or WNBA players on Caitlin Clark? She was voted by the players the ninth best guard. The ninth best guard in the WNBA. Okay.
So, I mean, here's the thing. She hasn't played for half of the games this season.
That's right.
So, if some of the players want to keep her off their five-person ballot based on that, fine. But, they haven't shown a history of doing that. The All-Star game and the voting of the players and the media.
I assume Taurasi was, what, the 38th guard last year?
Exactly. They have not shown that their vote is conditioned upon the healthy number of games that are played. Hmm. They now seem to be, that's their sort of position on this. Or they could say, you know, the lack of defense is enough to say that she's not one of the top five guards, I guess. But again, we talked about this last week. All these players who are making Caitlin Clark out to be the enemy or the scapegoat are, I think, going to come to some reality when they need her, when they all need her to step up so that they can all get paid more or so that their collective bargaining goes better because she's the only one who could pull that train. I wonder if she'll be there for them.
What do you think, Willie? What's going to happen? Have you talked to, on the record, off the record, any players? And when they talk about all this contract stuff, I'm sure if Caitlin Clark stomped and kicked and yelled at the WNBA to be involved, get the players involved, if she was the number one backer of the players, there's probably a better chance things get done.
Well, we heard the other day what I thought was very interesting. It was the first time I had ever heard anything like this when Doug Feinberg talked to us, and he said after this CBA, he believes that every team will have – there'll be one player on every team that'll be a $1 million player, and then the rest of it'll balance out. So, but I heard what Justin said last week, I believe it was, in terms of the Caitlin Clark, why would you stand up, so on and so forth. But she definitely has a voice that would orchestrate CBA dealings.
Could be some payback eventually. More on the WNBA and expansion. Sophie Cunningham, how about pipe down? You're not the commissioner. Enough.
Live from the Battleborne Broadcast Center, it's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
We got him. We got him, Willie. Justin Watkins is here. You know, we have a pretty good selection of things we hit every week, and it's about six or seven general areas. And I texted you today. I was like, I felt the passion from Justin last week on WNBA. By the way, go check out our YouTube page, Cofield & Company. There's a bunch of stuff up there, legal and otherwise, negotiations. I texted you. I was like, hey, do you want to hit this and this in WNBA? You're like, I love it. I'm like, all right. So here's story number two. The league is expanding.
Yep.
Now, one, Sophie Cunningham is not the commissioner. She's the thug, enforcer, badass, taekwondo, black belt at 6 years old. I think she insulted a lot of people. by saying basically Cleveland and Detroit suck. Why are we expanding to those cities? But do you think it was a stroke of brilliance?
Oh, my gosh, dude. I mean, I'm going to take a little victory lap on Sophie Cunningham. Oh, yeah. You know, where a couple weeks ago I said out of that whole tussle, the number one winner was Sophie Cunningham because people like me did not know her.
Right.
Like, I get that inside the WNBA, the insiders knew her, but the general public didn't know her. And now she's probably the second most famous WNBA player.
No, Asia Wilson.
Nobody knows who that is outside of like the outside of Las Vegas and the WNBA circles. So she is just, leaning into the heel of the league. She is she's going to be the bad guy of the league. And and I don't even think what she said is super controversial, which is like, hey, why don't you pick some cities where in some warm areas that maybe people want to live? That's what she basically said. And she did say, and you've already tried it in Detroit. And it didn't, and it failed.
Unfortunately, she also was a homer and mentioned Kansas City.
Yeah.
And she did say they have an empty arena. They've never had Missouri, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
She's from
Kansas
Missouri.
City, Nashville, Miami. Yeah, right. Kansas City was third on her
list. I don't think Nashville's a terrible idea I think women's basketball in Tennessee, I know Knoxville is not Nashville, but you've got Vandy there. I think women's basketball is kind of popular.
Yep.
On the college level, so you could do well there. I agree with the comeback yesterday from Miles Simmons, who was a Clevelander who flipped out about Miami. I don't know that there's a structure there. I mean, there's lots of senior citizens there, and senior citizens really seem to like the WNBA. And going back to when I covered college basketball, that was a big part of the crowd at the school I went to. But is Miami's not – I mean, that's a risky place to put a team in. Is anyone going to show up consistently?
I think the reason she brought up Nashville and Miami, one is – I think it popped in her head. Nashville was turned down for a franchise. Candace Parker said that she would love to coach a franchise there. She played for Tennessee. It came up in conversation. The two off-season leagues are played in Nashville and Miami this past year. Unrivaled was in Miami. Athletes Unlimited was in Nashville. Nashville would actually just make sense because of Pat Summitt's history. Arguably the greatest basketball – I mean, her and Tara Vanderveer are the greatest women's basketball coaches in the history. And like I said, with Candace Parker bringing up the fact that, you know, she would love to see it and would love to coach a team there or bring it or own and bring it, be part of a franchise ownership, like I said. And then the Miami thing with Unrivaled being a success down there and the backing and the fact that every player got paid more than any player in the WNBA. So I think that's why those two cities popped in her head. I'm just guessing. And then she brings up Kansas City because she's from Missouri.
How about the notion of expansion in a league that doesn't have full rosters, is not top-heavy, but there's some awful teams at the bottom?
Yeah.
And I know they're going to do it gradually, which is smart, but can this league handle in terms of the talent and competitive balance? And she did say this.
Yep.
Sophie Cunningham, that was the other part that got kind of buried and ignored. Can it handle going to 18 teams in the next 5 years, 4 years?
Who knew? Sophie Cunningham was the voice of reason in the room of the WNBA.
Well, you love her.
I got to get a jersey. I got to get a Sophie Cunningham jersey. But the players in the WNBA just got done saying, "Hey, we got to have a collective bargaining, you know, talk here. We need to get some more on our end." Even though maybe for the first time ever, the league is going to make money. For the first time ever, they've been on subsidies this entire time. But for the first time ever, they're like, now we want ours. And they're going to expand. I know it's not the players asking to expand. But you're going to expand by two teams. And, you know, the talent now is going to be spread across. There's no way that this is going to result in, I know what you said, I just don't think it's going to mean substantially more income for the WNBA players. Is there going to be too many players? There's going to be a huge drop-off in talent. There already is a huge drop-off in talent between, you know, the top 25 players and everybody else. I think the league needs to grow a little bit slower than that.
Well, and I think one thing that's on their mind and that they're seeing, especially in the front office, the latest valuations, the number one team in the league at $500 million is Golden State, the first-year team. So when you have a team that's, you know, you go from Golden State, New York, Vegas, $300, $400, $500 million, franchises are making money. The league overall made, but it's on an uptick, and you're talking about adding six teams by 2030, including this year's Golden State team. We got Portland, Toronto, and then these other three now on the back end by 2030. So I think what they're seeing is these valuations that are coming out and what these teams are worth.
Let's continue on the women's sports thing, because one of the big predictions you made with NIL and this, is it going to solve all, right, once the judge comes down with the ruling, you said it's going to be a problem with Title IX, with equality for women. And the lawsuits are coming in now. So what have you seen so far?
One day, right? Yep. One day of the implementation, and you saw Title IX lawsuits. So on the first day, we saw three very interesting things. Number one, you saw some of the plaintiffs in-house go and say, we think the schools were flubbing their numbers. We want to audit. So day one, they're asking for an audit of the revenue to confirm, because remember, the $20.5 million cap is based on the average revenue across the Power Five. Power Five. That includes Oregon State and Washington State for this purpose. Okay. So they've already started. We're auditing. They're going to go through every team, and they're going to confirm whether or not they were being truthful with their numbers. That's the first thing that's happened. Number two, you've got objections and challenges and appeals on Title IX for the house settlement itself and the back pay. Okay, that's the damages that which have not yet been paid out for everybody in the last 10 years leading up to the lawsuit. And they're saying, dude, you're giving ninety-four percent of this, you know, $1.8 billion, which is the past amount, to men, and only less than 6% to women, and it's a Title IX violation. You can't do that. And the arguments against that are, hey, this is about lost NIL opportunity. It wasn't about equal opportunity in education. It was a lawsuit that was about you not letting us go out and get NIL deals because it was against NCAA rules. This is an antitrust case. It's not a Title IX case. Okay. Yes, that's true. But when you're looking at how you came up with those NIL opportunities, you looked at TV ratings. You didn't look at NIL opportunities. What are the TV ratings for Livy Dunn?
Mm-hmm.
Nothing, right?
She makes a lot of money, though.
But she's the number one.
Because it ain't all about TV. That's not the only measure.
That's
and
right.
Much of NIL is actually online and social media.
100%, right? So it's an attack on the direct way in which you calculated where to spend the money, right? And I think there's a lot to be had there. Then, day one. Now we're going to see lawsuits about Title IX moving forward, because as these schools come out and decide how they're going to spend this cap, and some of them are announcing it publicly, okay, we're going to put the money here, 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 and here. Football, basketball, football, women's basketball, men's basketball, baseball, and some, like Oregon State's surely going to spend on baseball. And if that money is not spent equally between men and women, you're going to see lawsuits. And every Title IX lawyer that I have seen opine on this situation has said there's two safe ways to do it. One, 50-50 it,
yep,
and call it a day. Or two, you can do it based on the percentage of the student body population at your institution. If your institution happens to have 60% men and 40% women, it's defensible for you to apportion the money in that way.
Student body, not athlete.
Student body
population.
Student body population, right? Like, it's defensible.
Yeah.
Not saying you're going to win, but it's defensible that way. And remember, Title IX is about providing equal opportunities to men and women. Not equal pay, equal opportunities. And the whole house settlement was based on the past. The past has built into it the oppression,
yes,
of women's opportunities. So when you use that as a formula moving forward, you have just promulgated the past oppression and are not providing equal opportunities into the future. So, I mean, like I said, people saw this as I think now, if I'm giving credit to the NCAA in the 80s and the presidents, that they all going into this eyes wide open. They know all these lawsuits are coming, and they're just trying to survive till 2031. That's what I think now. They know it's going to come because it's impossible. Now, there's going to be hundreds, if not thousands, of lawsuits.
Yeah.
And they're just going to try to survive. They're going to try to drag it out.
Coming up, I got to get your take on people threatening lawsuits. So Jake Paul likes to talk tough. And now we are in the crosshairs. The people who speak for a living, write for a living, about these Jake Paul fights. And he's saying, you don't say this about my fights anymore, or I'm going to sue. And he actually was pretty much levied at Piers Morgan. And Piers Morgan came back and he's like, ha, ha, ha.
Live from the Battleborn Broadcast Center, it's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
I don't know why I felt bad after the show in the evening last night, but I felt bad, and I have no personal responsibility to address things that go on in town, but I felt very out of the loop. We were in the Lotus Broadcasting Building, which is on Flamingo and Durango, and I saw some wind. Man, I got out of the station. It's calm. Nothing happened on the west side. Then I get home and I'm on TikTok and it's like a flood of videos of just all hell breaking loose on the east side. Trop and Pecos, it was like someone had just flicked over multiple poles and power lines and the traffic signals.
Yeah.
Something even like kind of close to where we are, Jones and Harmon, there was something there. Out in Henderson, it was a mess. And I thought to myself, thank you, that didn't happen, because I live on the west side. I got like a janky tree out front, a big one. I think that thing would have been ripped right out. But I was thinking of you. Like, what? Okay, let's talk first. The power lines and the poles are coming down. Your car gets crushed.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you go? Who do you go after?
Well, typically, you're going to go with your own homeowner's insurance or your own car insurance on something like that.
You can't go after the city.
Definitely not the city is not going to be responsible. Power lines, right, are held by utility companies. And absent a showing that they did something improper, the installation of the pole wasn't proper. Now, there is a movement towards providing safer power, right? Like, obviously, power could be done underground. It doesn't need to be up anymore, right? And a lot of these wildfires, these fires that happen in towns are caused by down power lines. And so there is this movement about like, hey, shouldn't we have these power lines in the ground now? Or two, what ends up happening in some of these, I'll say, more dangerous areas where there's a lot more foliage around that can catch fire if a line's down, is in high wind areas, they cut the power. I think that's something to be looked at. There are safe ways in which they can, do some of those things. But yeah, I mean, you're mostly going. You got me thinking now that you just talked about Henderson. I'm like, dude, my house isn't really, we're getting close to being done, and it's not completely closed in.
Yeah, there were parking lots with those firework stands blowing all over the place. Oh, so you could see construction. Buildings are tilting.
I gotta go drive by there. I might have fireworks inside.
Well, I saw that one street that you're talking about that went viral on TikTok everywhere, mm-hmm. and it was just pole.
It was Trop.
Trop and McLeod area. Huh. Those are older neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. So what I'm wondering is, to your point, in terms of the older structures where they should go in, even if they don't put it underground, at some point they should be, reinforcing these things. Because Trop and McLeod was around when I was a kid.
Yeah.
That's old Paradise Valley, mm-hmm. right? So, I mean... some of these older neighborhoods, they need to think about maybe reinforcing what they have in the ground already.
Yeah, and it gets tricky in some of those situations too, because they've got to coordinate amongst all utilities. You know, like, it's not just power lines up there. There's telephone lines. There's internet boxes up there that they use. So it can get complicated. But that is a part of their responsibility as part of their infrastructure, is to go around to inspect, to ensure that these poles are still safe. And if they're not, get them replaced.
Justin Watkins, attorney with us. We got like 30 seconds left. In a neighborhood, my tree comes down, hits your house. What happens?
Yeah, I'm going to make a claim against your homeowner's insurance for whatever damage is caused, and that's typically, it's going to pay out that way.
Okay.
You don't really have a defense to it.
Okay. Well, it's not me fighting. I would worry about the insurance company being like, sorry, only the house is covered, not your yard.
Yeah, acts of God. There are some, you know, sort of acts of God. Disaster. Yeah, natural disaster exclusions, but most homeowner's insurance cover those kinds of things.
A few more legal stories. We're going to talk about that Jake Paul threatening lawsuits, but also Brennan Marion, the former OC at UNLV, is at Sac State. Sac State got denied by the NCAA a chance to go to FBS. Two other schools are going to FBS, and then I see Jeffrey Kessler and Sac State. Jeffrey Kessler is a scary mofo.
Live from the Battleborne Broadcast Center, it's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
Justin Watkins is with us. We're at Battleborne Injury Lawyers. Willie Griffin, the company. It's Cofield. So Jake Paul had another fight where it was terrible. Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. did nothing. As many fighters who go in there with him do nothing. A little bit of a late flurry at the end. He threw like 40 of his 160 punches in the last couple rounds. Fight sucked. It's a common theme.
Mm-hmm.
Last week, Jake Paul had gone on with Pierce Morgan, who really got into him about, why are you fighting Mike Tyson at 100 years old? Like, what's the point? Like, really pissed him off, and Jake Paul flipped out and was like, who the hell are you? So after the Chavez fight, a lot of us were like, okay, what's going on here? I won't use, hey, it's fixed, but I do believe there's some incentive to kind of juice him in on the opponent's side. You know what? Fight, but easy. Jake Paul comes out and says, you know, people saying fixed, my legal team is going after you guys. And then I see Pierce Morgan responded in a very creative way. What can – we've talked about this before, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, do I have to say, I know the fight was fixed? I have knowledge. Like, what
– yeah, yeah.
Are you in dangerous territory on – fights are not competitive.
It has to be a statement of fact,
yes,
that you know is false, and because he's a public figure, and because it's newsworthy, it has to be done with actual malice for the purpose of harming him. So you have a lot of leeway. Now, the question is Pierce Morgan a journalist or an entertainer?
That too.
You know, there's I think at this point he's probably more entertaining than anything to do with journalism. So let's say that he's in the standard of, if he knows it's false and says it's false, or makes a statement, a fact that's false, then he's liable, which may or may not be the case. I think everything that Pierce Morgan said was fine. And, of course, he's bright, and he's been doing this for a very long time. So he knew exactly where he was walking with this, and he kept using the word staged. But he used it in a way that's like, they're staging this all around him with these fighters that are too old to fight. So he wasn't saying they're not fighting. He wasn't saying that they were purposely losing. He was saying the whole situation is staged, even though he knows that word's charged, right? But he was using it, I would say, differently, and it clearly from the context, differently than how you and I would normally use the word staged when talking about boxing or combat
sports. He
said
he clearly stages fights that are to his obvious benefit. He is staging events that are entertaining on a certain level. I mean, this could be the same way you talk about professional wrestling.
Yep.
Sure, it's a fight.
Yep. No, I think it's probably more than that, and I think even Morgan would agree it's more than that. Okay. It's just that you're putting on a performative, you know, show,
mm-hmm,
because of who you select as your opponents that are way past their prime. They're not in the ability to fight anymore. You know it. They know it. And so, you know, there's not any real danger of you losing. And from that perspective, the word staged might be considered okay to use, right? There's no real chance of losing.
Well, and that was what I was going to say, is the verbiage, the vernacular, right? The vocabulary that's being used. He's staging the fights. It's the same way that we've talked about some of the greatest boxers when we say, when we simply just say, he's not fighting anyone. He's basically, when you say certain fighters get to a certain age and then they just start fighting fighters that
I
they
feel
know.
Like this is stronger, though, than tune-up fights.
I agree.
You know?
I don't even mean tune. Well, tune-up is more where you're still in your prime and you're tuning up to a big payday. Where as Floyd got older, as Oscar got older, they just were fighting guys that they knew that they weren't going to lose.
I mean, the greatest Floyd promotion ever was against what was his name, Carlos something, and it was the poster was pretty risky. Oh, it sounds really dangerous. sounds really dangerous. Jake Paul said, "Get ready to be served, you pigs." If he serves someone, what is that whole thing, the slap?
Yeah.
Well, what is that? Like, at some point, if someone is throwing out these lawsuits, you're like, no.
Yeah.
Screw you. I'm pushing back.
Yeah. Like, anti-slap legislation that exists in most states, and Nevada's got some of the strongest anti-slap statutes in the country. The whole purpose, what you need to think about is that these are statutes that are put in place to give the court system a mechanism by which they can kick a case out very early on if they think that the case is being used for suppression of freedom of exchange of ideas or expression, or to suppress access to a court system or justice. So lawyers use anti-slap all the time, you know, like they get sued by somebody that they sued, and that person who's being sued doesn't like it, and they go, you know what, he's abusing the court system, I'm suing him. And almost always the court will immediately kick it out and say, anti-slap, you're not suing lawyers for using the court system that's here for their disposal to use. And it's wide ranging, and so it affects journalists. It affects entertainers. They are allowed to have freedom of expression. They'll use their platform as it's been designed, and they will kick them out absent some pretty strict proof as to why this is not you trying to suppress, you know, freedom of speech or expression, but is actually damaging and defamatory.
766-1400 is the number here at Battleborne Injury Lawyers across, of course, an office in Northern Nevada. 775-766-1400. Back to college football for a second. Delaware, Missouri State in. They can be FBS now. Sacramento State tried. They were denied. Now they're working with prominent antitrust attorney Jeffrey Kessler, who's worked at the highest levels. What's going on here?
I mean, he is the go-to if you're going to sue the NCAA or Major League Baseball or any of the big, you know, leagues out there. If you're on the plaintiff's side and you're going to claim antitrust, it's Kessler. He's the guy. And their point is we were denied the waiver because we don't have a conference. They wouldn't let us play independent. And you're letting all these other ones in. And so, you know what? Let's check on your antitrust backbone here. Why are you deciding our fate? Woo! And, man, what they're doing up there is really interesting. I mean, you are seeing Marion and Sacramento State in the final four or five on some of the highest level recruits in the nation right now. I'm talking four or five star guys have Alabama, Georgia, Sacramento State, and Clemson as their final four. And they're getting a couple of these guys. So they are making a big push. Clearly, they're not going to give up on this idea that they are going to be the FBS. I'm not exactly sure why the Mountain West hasn't invited them. I think it would be a great addition for them to do it. Maybe it's because it's just a little too close to Davis and they don't want two in the same pot up there. I don't know.
Although Davis right now is not playing football. Which
yeah,
I don't
but they're adding
that.
I mean, they do play football.
No, I meant
they do play football.
Is Mountain West going to add Davis for football?
But I think in the future, okay. I don't think they've said that, but they do play football there. Right. You know, so
well, I know they do. That seemed to be an obvious, okay, yeah. They're going to play football, right?
No. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So I don't know, but it seems like a natural fit for the Mountain West moving forward. It would be a great ad. They're going to spend a ton of money, and they're getting all these great recruits, so it's going to add profile to the Mountain West. But there's something there that's happening that's not making that happen. I'm not exactly sure why.
One of my favorite stories of the week, and this was featured on a couple of news programs, Costco has irked Lululemon. That's the company with the $128 joggers and five-pocket men's pants and a little zip-up. Costco's got something kind of similar, $10 to $25.
Sometimes $8. Yeah.
Costco's being sued.
Yeah.
And, by Lululemon.
And if I was Lululemon, I would do it too. Because in the world of trademark and patents and copyrights, if you don't sue somebody, if you don't seek to enforce the protections of your intellectual property, you lose it. So you, okay. The courts make you do it. Otherwise, you give it up. And so it's there's tons of examples of that. Kleenex, Xerox, Thermos. These words became generic because those companies didn't seek to enforce their trademarks early enough in some of those cases. So I think you got to do it if you're them. You know, if there's knockoffs out there that are putting on, you know, have seams in the same place, have the same sort of material, and you've done all the legwork to figure out why those seams are the most comfortable, and you've done the research and you've done the development on it, and then they just jump in and you don't have a deal with them, and they're paying for the knockoffs and they're just using your R&D to get there, they might have a claim. And if you'll recall, they did this to Peloton. Peloton had some gear out there.
And they have now hooked up
now
together.
They have a partnership.
Why is generic medicine different?
What's that?
Why is generic medicine different?
Generic medicine isn't different. No. Those are going to be affiliate deals.
So you're paying the original company?
Yes.
Something?
Yes.
Okay.
Right? Now, there are ingredients. There are things that naturally occur, which you cannot patent, right? Like if I find naturally occurring substances and I combine them together and that makes a medicine, well, you don't get protections over that. And if I can find the generic versions of those things, that's fine. But generally speaking, it's why drugs are developed in the United States, and it's why they're the most expensive here, is because they have intellectual property protections for drugs and their compounds. So it's...
Don't you think it's, for both of you guys, don't you think it's damaging to the original company when, okay, I know they did the R&D and they put the money in, but if their pants are $128 and this company can sell it for $10, I mean, $128, what the hell's going on?
Well, but you're also just saying that based on sheer appearance versus, like, does it hold up? You know, that $8 might not hold up at all. And right. One or two washes and it's done for. But it looks the same as the $128. So all we know is that they've been able to make it look similar, not perform the same.
I'm getting 24 pairs of the pants.
Okay. I actually just
although they're for very thin guys, so I don't know if my large ass will work.
I actually just ordered two pair of pants from a company because of the description and how they look and the example in videos to Lululemon. I have two pair of Lululemon pants, but I order from this other one and they're cheaper. Now, here's what I'm wondering is, my question to you, Justin, is let's say this holds up and they win.
Yep.
Then it opens the door for them to go after, like, for instance, let's say when I get these pants and if they're identical to what I'm expecting them to be, but they're not Lulus, now it's opened the door for them to go after everybody.
Oh, I mean, the door is open anyway. They have to do what they have to do to protect their intellectual property. There's nothing wrong with a competitor using your brand to differentiate the two. It's like when you watch a Coke commercial, they might talk about Pepsi, different than Pepsi because of the. You're allowed to use the trademark of your competitor in order to distinguish yourself. So you could say, hey, Lululemon's got these pants. Here's why ours are better. You could do that. There's no problem there. Right. But when you don't say there's any difference and you're making it look like it's the same,
right,
that's where you got a problem. It's about confusion to the public.
Gotcha.
I feel like oftentimes it's just safer not to talk about the competition, you know, like low fees for an attorney. You just don't, you know,
yeah.
It's kind of sub-tweeting about it. I don't know.
Yeah, you're getting into the weeds here with my industry.
In your biz. Yeah. It's really, because And you know what's funny? I do listen to commercials, yeah. and I know what kind of everyone's saying. Yeah. I'm like, oh, okay. Let's see what's happening there. All right, we are up against it. Justin, have a great fourth weekend. I know you're going out of town. Be safe, and we'll see you next week. All right.